Broadcasting live from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts radio.
This is Mike Dolce,
Ian McCall,
James Little Evil Pulver,
the Crippler Chris Leaving,
Frank the Legend Shamrock,
Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Brawls.
Just under 48 hours removed from UFC 149, where both Henan Barão and Jose Aldo retained their world titles, one of them albeit in controversial circumstances. And welcome to the first ever live edition of the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts podcast. And my first guest, I think quite fitting, is Mr. Damon Martin from Fox Sports. Damon, first off, brother, great to have you on the show. How you been keeping?
I am good. Thank you for having me, especially on the first live edition. I feel special.
It's always a pleasure, man, to have you on. Damon, first off, mate, the weekend's card at UFC 169, did it really live up to expectations?
No, it didn't, unfortunately. I mean, it was, it was a decision-filled card. 10 out of 12 fights ended in decision, the most ever in UFC history. So, no, unfortunately, it was a fairly disappointing card. There were a couple decent fights. The main events, you know, kind of went the way a lot of people predicted them to go, which, you know, when you have those kind of fights, you'd like a surprise, you know, you'd like an upset, something like that. But, it was definitely not the best card, not the best card of the year, and probably not the best card we're going to see this year, I'm sure.
Damon, were they some of the worst prelim fights we've seen in UFC history? Because there was probably only one fight that stood out. That was Ally Akinta and Mr. Lee. Should the UFC be looking to, you know, boost the prelim cards, especially on Super Bowl weekend in the States?
Well, you know, I think it depends. I mean, you know, you never know. I mean, listen, I was fortunate enough to be sitting cage side for UFC 166 in Houston when we were treated to, you know, Nate Marquardt and Hector Lombard and Jessica Eye and Sarah Kaufman and a lot of other great fights on that undercard. You just never know. I mean, you could get a great fight, matched up, and it ends up being a stinker, and then you could get a fight that nobody's talking about and ends up being a war. So, honestly, you just never know with matchups until they happen. I mean, on paper, you know, there weren't a lot of big names on the undercard, but there were some interesting matchups. It's just, unfortunately, you know, no one really brought the fire. I agree. Ally Akinta and Kevin Lee did a great job, and I thought – Clint Hester and Andy Enns had a couple of moments in their fight, but yeah, overall it was a pretty sad, pretty lackluster preliminary card. Definitely did not set the stage, and then again the main card guys didn't really do much to stave that off either.
Yeah, getting to the main card, Damon, Abel Trujillo and Jamie Varner, probably the only really noteworthy fight on the card of the night. It really got off to a bang, and everyone expected, you know, that to continue on. Looking at this fight, what should we expect from Trujillo? It was a mixed bag coming into this, what we were going to get from him. And were you surprised with the outcome against Jamie Varner?
You know, I was a little surprised. I mean, listen, Trujillo is a guy that throws fire. I mean, when he goes in there, everything he's throwing has knockout written behind it. So you have to be very aware of that. And Jamie Varner found out the hard way. I mean, Jamie Varner is a very good boxer, accomplished boxer. He doesn't get talked about enough with his boxing, but he's actually got really solid hands. And he just got over-aggressive. He hurt Trujillo, had him hurt, looked like he was going to possibly finish, went chasing, and like I said, all it takes is one punch from that guy, and it's over, and that's all it took. So, you know, Trujillo is one of those guys. I don't think he'll ever be upper echelon. I don't think he'll ever be a top 10 fighter, but... There's a huge place in this world for the guys like Joe Lozon, for the guys like Chris Lytle, who are not necessarily ever going to fight for a title, but they go home with a bonus every time. They go out there and put on exciting fights. They're the ones that save cards. You know, Abel Trujillo and Jamie Varner really saved this card from just being an awful main card. I think that... You gotta give Trujillo credit. You know, his one loss in the UFC was to Nurmagomedov, which, again, like I said, he's not going to be a top 10 guy. But you put him in there against other exciting lightweights, guys that will go in there and throw down, and he's going to make it exciting. And I think the same thing goes for Jamie Varner. I mean, this is technically a couple losses for him, and I think 3 out of 4. But, again, Varner's a guy that should go nowhere. He's always going to bring it. He's always going to make it exciting if you put him in there with an exciting opponent.
Do you think Varner is possibly in danger, Damon?
I don't think so. Listen, he took this fight on short notice. He stepped up and helped the UFC, and they ended up putting on a great fight. He took home a $75,000 bonus. You know, I think he's going to stick around. I mean, obviously, you don't want to go three losses in a row, so he may have to go out there and fight a little more cautiously the next time, but I don't think Varner's going to go anywhere. I think they'd love the performance, and that's going to earn him another comeback fight regardless.
And what about Abel Trujillo? As you mentioned there, you know, we haven't really learned anything from Abel. You know, on his UFC debut, it was a very sort of similar fight against Marcus Levasseur. What's next for him in the lightweight division?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, listen, the guy, as I said, I don't think he's ready for a top 10 type opponent, nor should he be in there with the top 10 guy. He fought one earlier in his career, the fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Didn't go his way, obviously. That was the one fight where he really got dominated. So, you know, again, I pick out a fighter that's known for exciting fights, that likes to stand and bang. And, you know, maybe, I actually think a fun fight would be Abel Trujillo against Ross Pearson when Ross Pearson comes back. Unfortunately, he got injured and had to drop out of his fight against Melvin Guillard. But I think that would be a fun fight because Ross is, you know, kind of the same way. I don't think Ross is necessarily a top 10 guy, but he goes out there and puts on exciting fights. So I think that would be a fun fight, Ross Pearson against Trujillo, depending on how long Ross is out. I'm not really sure how long his injury is going to keep him out, but I think that would be a fun one.
Definitely, Damon. I'm moving on to the flyweight division with Ali Bogatinov versus John Lineker. John missing weight initially and then weighed back in, got himself on point. This fight, a lot of people, I think, expected a little bit more from John Lineker also. I know Bogatinov went in as the favorite. What did you make of this fight, Damon, and what is next for Bogatinov?
You know, the fight went pretty much the way I thought it would. I actually had picked Ali Bogatinov to win this fight before it started. I thought his wrestling, his ground control, and just the way he pushes the pace would ultimately win him the fight. You know, Lineker got a lot of hype off those three knockouts he had in a row. But when you look at the level of competition, he wasn't facing top guys, really. In my opinion, Ali Bogatinov getting the one win over Tim Elliott was more impressive than any of the three wins that Lineker had. So I thought that Lineker was a little overrated considering what he had actually done. And it showed in the fight. I mean, he had a great second round, but he got taken down in the first round, got taken down in the third round, couldn't counter Bogatinov's pace. Obviously, the weight cut was pretty brutal on him. So, yeah, I mean, the fight went pretty much the way I thought it would. And for Ali Bogatinov, you know, I got to imagine the guy is going to get a title shot. I mean, listen, Demetrius Johnson doesn't have a lot of contenders out there. I mean, I think if John Dodson had been able to fight and didn't get injured before his last fight, you know, he could have won, and I think we'd be looking at that rematch because I think Dodson still presents the biggest test for Demetrius. He's given him the biggest challenge so far, but unfortunately, you know, he did have to drop out of that fight. He does have a knee injury, so he's going to be out for a little while longer. So, you know, Ali has done his business, and I think we're going to see Johnson and Bogatinov later this year.
I was going to mention that to you, Damon. Ian McCall is fighting Brad Pickett in London in just under a month's time, where does that fight rank in the division?
Well, you know, I think for Brad Pickett, it's really interesting because Brad Pickett, you know, is a great addition to the division. You know, I like Brad Pickett a lot. He always brings the fire. He's a very exciting fighter. You know, Ian McCall's not there yet because he did start off with a few losses to his career. Obviously, the loss to Demetrius. Then he had the loss to Joseph Benavidez. There's no shame in that. But again, you know, he had to deal with some losses before he came back and finally got that first UFC win. You know, for Brad Pickett, you know, he's coming off a loss to Michael McDonald in a very exciting fight. This is a guy who is a top 10 fighter in the division. But what he has going for him more than maybe anybody else is he has a win over Demetrius Johnson. You know, he beat Demetrius Johnson in the WEC in 2010. So I wouldn't say Pickett gets a win and gets a title shot. I would think he would have to get at least two wins. But if he gets two wins, I think Pickett jumps to the front of the line just based on the fact that he has a win over the champion.
Great stuff, Damon. Always great to have you on the show here. Damon, Alistair Overeem versus Frank Mir. Overeem got the decision victory. Were you a little bit disappointed at the fact, Alistair didn't go in for the finish? He looked quite tentative in this fight to really go all out, guns blazing for the finish.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed, but then again, not really. And the reason I say that is, listen, the guy, you know, I talked to Alistair before the fight, and he said, you know, I don't care that, you know, people are talking about I may get cut with a loss, and Dana said it's kind of, you know, loser leaves town, that kind of talk. But listen, fighters say that kind of thing before the fight, knowing full well that it's playing in the back of their head. So Alistair knew he needed to go out and get a win. Overextending himself is what got him caught the last time. Overextending himself is what got him caught against Bigfoot Silva. He didn't want that to happen again. He wanted to go in there and have a strong performance. And, you know, I'm kind of disappointed by some people saying he didn't look as good as he could because, yeah, we expect over him to knock people out. But look at Frank Mir when that fight was over. He was busted up, bloody, beaten up. He offered no kind of resistance to Alistair Overeem. So, yeah, in some ways you look at it and say he should have finished. But at the same time, there was no doubt who won. And it wasn't like he just went in there and, you know, laid and preyed on the guy. He beat him up. Mir looked beat up. He was bloodied, you know, from the eye and from the nose when the fight was over. I don't know why people are so upset about Overeem's performance. I thought he looked great. I thought his cardio was on point. His ground game was on point. If anything, what this fight showed us is Frank Mir is just not the same guy we thought he was. You know, Frank Mir is not the same guy he was even 2 or 3 years ago.
And saying that, Damon, one of the guys, you know, he's a real company guy, Frank Mir. He's been around for years. You know, what's next for Frank Mir? Is that the end of his tenure in the UFC for the moment?
You know, I don't know. I mean, my honest answer is I don't know. If this was any other fighter, 4 losses in a row, I would say he's gone. But the fact is, Frank Mir has been in the UFC for a ridiculous amount of time at this point, going on, you know, 14 years, 13 years, I think he's been in the UFC. He's been a champion on a couple of occasions. He's always stepped up. I mean, when Alistair Overeem had to drop out of his main event fight against Junior Dos Santos, you know, Mir stepped right up and took that fight. He lost, but, you know, he stepped up and took the opportunity to fight for that belt. And when you look at the guys he's lost to, I mean, none of those are bad losses. You look at, you know, Junior Dos Santos, that's not a bad loss. Daniel Cormier, not a bad loss. Josh Barnett, not a bad loss. Overeem, these are all top 10 guys. So I don't know. I'd like to, you know, I wish I could say I know for sure what Mir's going to do, but the UFC may give him another shot just because he's Frank Mir.
Would you like to possibly, you know, maybe one more shot, as you said there, going up against someone like Saul Pelele? Would that not be a sensible fight for the UFC to make?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Mir is a company guy. He's been around. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Rich Franklin. You know, Rich Franklin's a guy that, you know, no matter what happens, you want to give the guy another shot because he's been such a good guy to the company for so long, and he's been around the sport and been around the UFC for such a long time. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Mir did not look good. I mean, he looked awful, let's be honest. Yeah, I mean, true. You know, let's call it what it is. It was awful. It was an awful performance. Yeah, he, you know, usually when Mir's on his back, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. This is going to be an armbar attempt or a triangle or something crazy is going to happen. He offered up nothing against Overeem. Now, I saw him swivel his hips, I believe, one time during the fight when he was on the bottom, and that's when Overeem took the chance to kind of stand up and get out of there. The old Frank Mir, you know, would have had an arm, you know, at that point, before we even knew what was going on. So, you know, does he, you know, the heavyweight division is fairly shallow. It's not the, you know, it's not the deepest division in the world. So maybe he gets one more shot against, you know, a guy kind of on the outside of that division, like a, you know, a Matt Mitrione, a Sean Jordan, a guy that's not necessarily a top guy, and give him a shot. If he can't beat that guy, then, you know, again, I think they sit down and have a very serious conversation with Frank and say, how much longer do you want to do this?
Definitely big time. Alistair Overeem, call out Brock Lesnar. We know that's not going to happen. We know Brock isn't coming back to the UFC. You know, what's next for this guy? Is it someone like possibly, you know, a Stipe Miocic or a guy like that?
You know, I suggested on Saturday night, I actually said Stipe Miocic would be a good offer. Somebody else said Junior Dos Santos, and I think that would be fine as well. You know, Junior and Alistair have danced around fighting each other forever. And so to finally get them in there, and that would be a good comeback fight for Junior. And at the same time, neither guy is going to sniff a title shot anytime soon. So, you know, I think that's a fight that would be exciting because you could definitely, you know, co-main event a card with JDS against Alistair because those two are going to be going at each other in the press a lot. So I like that fight a lot. I do like the Stipe Miocic matchup because Stipe's a guy who's in the top 10, but, you know, we didn't see a ton out of Stipe in his last fight against Gabriel Gonzaga, so I think he would, you know, really get a test against a guy like Overeem. And another fight that somebody mentioned to me on Saturday night, and I tell you what, just for the fun of it, would be a great, great fight to watch, and that is Alistair Overeem against Mark Hunt. I think that would be a fun fight. Two former K-1 champions going at it. Yeah, so that's another one. So I think there's a few options, and I think that in and of itself is why Overeem sticks around, is because right away people could say there's 3 or 4 guys that he could face. And you don't get that with every fighter. I can't come up with three guys I'd want to see Frank Mir face right now, but I can come up with three or four for Overeem.
Well said, Damon. Oh, yeah, completely agree. I love that Mark Hunt fight. I've said that one as well myself. But let's see what happens. Okay, guys, you can catch us, obviously, on the new website, www.talkingbrawlsmixedmartialarts.com, and I'm at Niall McGrath 4 on Twitter, and at Talking Brawl, so hit us up on that, and obviously Damon Martin, at Damon Martin. Damon, Ricardo Lamas and Jose Aldo retaining his title by decision on Saturday night. In my opinion, I was very disappointed with Ricardo Lamas's performance. Was it the fact that, you know, Jose is just so good that he makes a guy of Lamas's quality look average?
You know, it was really disappointing. I mean, listen, I picked Jose Aldo to win the fight. I really did believe he was the superior guy. But, you know, I thought Lamas had a shot if he went in there and tried to wrestle him, you know, tried to get him to the ground. He has a very aggressive ground game, nasty ground and pound, as he showed in the fight with Eric Koch. But, I mean, I think he shot for like two takedowns the entire fight. I was blown away. I mean, Aldo stood in front of him for a good long time in that fight. And Lamas just, I don't.
Lost Damon's connection there. I'll just try and get him back on here, see what happened there. Hello, Mr. Martin. We're having some technical difficulties here. Can you hear me?
No problem. I'm still here.
Good stuff, brother.
Yeah, but yeah, just not the performance I thought we'd see from Ricardo. It was not. And listen, you know, I got to be honest with Jose Aldo as well. I mean, this is a guy who's supposed to be one of the number one guys in the world, and I believe he is, but you know, it was a bizarre performance from him as well. I mean, I thought there was a few times where he could have rushed in and really hurt Lamas and put some damage on him, maybe go for the finish, but it seemed like he was content to just outpoint him.
Yeah, but why was he, you know, do we not need to see Jose Aldo make, you know, a big statement? Because he's clearly not going to be a pay-per-view draw, really, in the future because of this. You know, he's been pretty stale in some of his fights.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to hurt him. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, you know, when you talk about the best guys in the division, the best guys pound for pound, you know, we're looking at, you know, you look at a guy like John Jones, you look at a guy like Chris Weidman, you look at, you know, those guys who are in Cain Velasquez, who, you know, if they're not finishing, they're just decimating their opponents. I mean, Cain Velasquez, you know, doesn't finish everybody, but man, when he puts a beating on somebody, when it's over, you look like Junior Dos Santos did after UFC 166. I mean, he looks like he just had a bomb explode in his face. And Aldo's not doing that lately. I mean, Aldo, you know, Aldo, since he's come to the UFC, you know, the competition, yes, it's gotten better, but it does seem like he's not taking as many chances. We don't see, you know, some of those explosive strikes that we used to see out of him. So I don't know if it's necessarily he's playing it safer or, you know, he's just figured out a way to kind of cruise to decisions. I don't know. But, you know, Aldo's standing right now is kind of, you know, kind of what we give criticism to wrestlers for when they take guys down. You know, that's basically what he's doing.
Is he just so much in his comfort zone, Damon, as I mentioned earlier on, that he knows he's so good that he can almost dictate where the fight goes?
You know, a little bit. I mean, I think a little bit of that is the case. I mean, I think, you know, Lamas said something to me before the fight that really stood out true. And he said, I think a lot of guys lose to Jose Aldo before they ever get in the cage because the guy's so intimidating and so good at what he does. And I don't know, maybe it happened to Lamas as well, but I think that is true, and I think Aldo just knows that. I mean, look, his last couple of fights have not been great. I honestly thought his performance against the Korean Zombie was pretty poor, and I didn't really consider the Zombie to be a number one guy. So, it was just an odd, I don't know, it's almost like he's cruising to victory, and again, I've said this for the last year and a half, and I'll say it again now on your show, if he fights Anthony Pettis, I believe Jose Aldo will get knocked out inside the first three rounds because Pettis is a different kind of animal, different kind of power, different kind of striker. And I don't know that Aldo really wants to face a guy like that because Pettis will put a hurting on him.
Yeah, Damon, you've mentioned, Dana talked about a potential super fight that Anthony Pettis wants Jose Aldo next time out. Is this really, first of all, what people want to see, Damon?
Well, you know, I think to a point, because it was teased last year when Pettis was going to drop down and face Aldo at 145. I mean, that was the fight up until they made Matt Brown and Carlos Condit. That was the fight I was most excited about. I mean, I loved that fight.
A ballet of violence.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't come together, of course, when Pettis got injured. So, yeah, I think it does make sense. I mean, listen, there's not a clear-cut number one guy at lightweight right now. I mean, Gilbert Melendez is coming off one win, but, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, he's the guy right now. And really, there's no one else to find. No one wants to see Benson Henderson fight Pettis for a third time. You know, no one's out there. I mean, Josh Thompson, you know, in my opinion, he beat Benson Henderson. And I really wouldn't have a problem if he gave the title shot to Thompson. But again, I don't think they're going to do that because he's off a loss. So, yeah, I mean, Aldo makes the most sense. But telling you right now, you know, keep an eye on this situation because, you know, from Saturday night and from the little bit of rumors I'm hearing today, I don't know that Jose Aldo is too itching to go up and surrender his title. There's a big rumor floating around that that's a sticking point with him. So we'll see if that actually becomes a sticking point in contract negotiations as well.
And Damon, you mentioned there in the lightweight division, there's no, you know, clear-cut number one contender. But the fact Anthony Pettis hasn't defended his title, you know, against a guy in the 155-pound division, is there not too many fights to make for it to be worthy of a super fight?
You know, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot. And this whole super fight talk is one of those things that never comes together. Yeah. Good Lord, go back and see how many times we've talked about George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva. Aldo doesn't see, and the thing about Aldo right now with him, and it's maybe more so with Aldo as a featherweight, is that, you know, the top two contenders in the division, he's already beaten. He beat Chad Mendez and he beat Cub Swanson. Now, I personally would love to see that Mendez-Aldo rematch. I think Mendez is a much different animal now than he was when he fought Jose the first time. I'd also like to see that fight take place in the United States, you know, things like that. I know Mendez traveling to Brazil, and, you know, again, Aldo's got to travel to the States, so I get it's unfair to both of them. But, you know, I'd like to see a rematch of that at some point. But, you know, fact is, Aldo has beaten both Cub Swanson and Chad Mendez, knocked them both out. So, you know, him going to lightweight right now does make a lot of sense.
Damon, you know, if he goes to lightweight to fight Anthony Pettis, do you think there's a chance he could be overroared in that division, you know, stepping up that extra 10 pounds?
You know, it could happen. I mean, everyone talks about how it's such a rough weight cut for Jose Aldo, and I don't discount the fact that it is. But, you know, Aldo will be. I mean, listen, I know, and I know you know this as well. There's some serious big guys at 155. Khabib Nurmagomedov is a big guy. Gilbert Melendez is a big guy. You know, there's guys who are cutting down from, you know, 190 to make 155. So, you know, Aldo, you know, may struggle to make 145, but he will be giving up some pretty good size against, you know, Benson Henderson is a freaking monster. He's a huge lightweight. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, I think Benson Henderson legitimately could probably fight at welterweight. He's so big. And so, you know, Aldo is going to be giving up a lot of size to some of these guys. So it could, you know, again, that's got to play in his mind. And listen, I've said this for years, and I'll say it again right now, this idea that just because you dominate one weight class means that you've got to move somewhere is garbage. I mean, I never believed George St. Pierre had to go up to middleweight to prove he was the best fighter on the planet. He's the best welterweight. Why do you have to be anything else? So if Aldo wants to stay a featherweight for the rest of his life, I'm completely okay with that. But he's the one that has said, you know, at some point I want to test 155. I feel like my body's, you know, big enough, blah, blah, blah. So, again, as long as he's saying it, then go for it. Otherwise, don't say it.
You're like me, Damon. You hate the old super fights.
I don't hate the super fights. I just hate that it feels like they have to be put together. I mean, I don't really see a purpose in them. Listen, if John Jones never wants to go to heavyweight, we never see him fight Cain Velasquez, do we really lose anything? No. We just have two great guys at two different weight classes. And unlike boxing, where the disparaging, the difference in weight is, you know, 3 or 5 pounds, you know, we're talking about 20, 30 pounds sometimes in some of these weight classes. So, you know, once they put on the weight after the weight cut, I mean, there's a reason why BJ Penn, you know, 6 or 7 years ago could hang in the welterweight division. And now it's a lot different animal because guys like Rory McDonald are huge monsters compared to him when he weighs in at 168 and he actually is walking around at 168, whereas Rory McDonald's cutting down from like 195 to make 170.
Definitely, completely agree. I hate the super fights. I'm going to say it straight up right now. Damon, moving on to the main event of the evening, Henan Barrow defeated Uriah Faber in the first round after 3:42. Obviously, albeit in controversial circumstances. What did you make of the fight? And, you know, a lot of people have said today and yesterday, you know, it was a question of Uriah not intelligently defending himself. You know, he did give the thumbs up sign. What was your take? It had to be a bit soon for Herb to stop it in a title fight, no?
Yeah, I thought it was an early stoppage. And listen, Herb Dean is the best referee in the business. I mean, I say this, Dana says this, everybody says this. Herb is the best in the business. I just thought it got stopped a little early. I mean, was Faber hurt? You know, did he get knocked down a couple of times in that fight? Yeah, Burrell looked fantastic. But, you know, and I also let me defend Herb Dean on one point on this. Well, I do believe it was an early stoppage. Listen, when Uriah's down there holding onto one leg of Burrell and just covering up with the other arm and not really doing anything while the guy's hammer fisting him, and because the rules are as they are, meaning Burrell can't hit him to the back of the head, you know, he can't rear back with a knee and knee him to the other side of the head, you know, his choices are pretty limited in that position. You know, that's also something you have to look at. That's something that we have to question for Faber, and I understand that. I had this big problem when a guy has a fighter mounted, takes his back, and then he rolls over and has him flattened out on the canvas, and the guy is basically covering up his entire head with his arms, and the guy's just kind of wailing down shots on him, and it keeps going because, you know, legally you cannot hit this guy in the back of the head. Legally you can't come down with elbows from a 12-6 angle and elbow him in the top of the head. And if the guy's covering up, the options are fairly limited. So, you know, I'm a big believer in improve your position or the fight's getting stopped. And so my thing with this fight was just, you know, we should have given Faber a little bit more time to try to get out of there as opposed to, you know, the 5 or 6 hammer fists he took that didn't get through. Now, if that continues and Faber doesn't move after getting a very loud warning saying you got to improve your position and he still just lays there, then whether it's a good stoppage or not, or whether he was actually hurt or not, you got to stop it, because you can't just lay there and block shots with your hand and think that's fighting intelligently. It's not. But in this case, I think he could have let it go on for a little bit longer, allowed Faber to roll, allow him to try to pull guard, allow him to try to do something to shift out of that position. But if it does go much longer and the guy's just sitting there, you know, I'm a believer in, listen, if you're just sitting stuck in a position and you literally cannot get out and the guy's punching you and all you can do is just block and hope he eventually runs out of gas, that's not intelligently defending yourself and that's not fighting back.
Damon, is a question for, you know, the commissions and the referees to be, you know, put it in writing that there should be more allowance in a title fight?
You know, no, and here's the thing. I hear this all the time. You know, it's kind of the same thing that irks me about the title fight thing with you have to beat the champion. Yeah. You know, you really have to go out there and beat the champion to get a win. No, you don't. If you won the fight, you won the fight. I don't care if the other guy has a gold belt when the fight starts. When it's a title fight, when the fight starts, neither guy is a champion. It's challenger versus challenger. I hear this all the time. I heard it after the Jones-Gustafson fight when they said, well, Gustafson didn't really beat him. Doesn't matter. Who won the fight is who won the fight. And it's the same thing here. I think a title fight should be judged the same because, listen, you know, when Junior Dos Santos was getting punished against Cain Velasquez, people are saying the fight should have been stopped. He took too much. The fight with Rosie Sexton and Jessica Andrade, everyone was saying, oh, it went too long. It should have been stopped. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Either we're protecting the fighters or we're not. And listen, Herb Dean saw Faber getting shot in the face with a big punch. He dropped, and then he just basically curves up in a turtle. You know, curves up in the fetal position, holding on and blocking with one hand because he's getting punched. Again, I think it was stopped early. I think they should have let it go on, but not because it was a title fight. I just think Faber was okay, and he should have been given a few extra seconds to try to, you know, spin, get out of there. You know, something, but again, you can't have it both ways. A guy can't be accused of not stopping a fight too early and then being accused of stopping the fight early. You got to have a middle ground.
Definitely. Completely agree. Awesome stuff, Damon. Damon, in hindsight for Uriah Faber, he took the fight in 3 weeks' notice, as we all know. He revealed to us afterwards that he'd torn his hamstring and he'd a bruised patella tendon, I think it is. Was it, you know, possibly should have Uriah opted out of this fight?
You know, I mean, listen, I really don't like when guys reveal injuries after the fact. Listen, let me say this. Uriah Faber is one of the truly good guys in this sport. I mean, really, he is a good guy. He is one of the true. I mean, listen, Herb Dean, you know, may have cost him a chance to come back in a title fight. And you know, you heard him just compliment Herb Dean. You know, he said Herb made a mistake, but Herb's the best in the business. He never cried over spilled milk. I was not a big fan of him, you know, revealing injuries because, listen, that's part of, you know, my opinion is if you step foot in the cage, injuries out the door. If you choose to fight, and you signed a contract and you say, I'm not dropping out of this fight, at that point, all the injuries go out the door. You can't make an excuse because you chose to fight. You could have dropped out. You could have gone to the doctor, and the doctor said you have a torn hamstring, and you'd be out of the fight. I get no one wants to do that, but that's the name of the game. If you step in the octagon, you've signed you basically signed a public waiver saying, I have no excuses. So I don't like that part of it. But listen, Faber, you know, Faber has never lost a non-title fight. Faber has beaten, I think he told me, 7 out of the 10 top 10 guys in the division. You know, he's beaten Eddie Wineland. He's beaten Michael McDonald. He's beaten, you know, so many of the guys that are out there. So could he get back there? Sure. But I don't think it's going to be for a little while. I think he's going to have to beat, you know, 3 or 4 guys to get back there, because even though the stoppage was early, the fight was pretty one-sided even up to that point.
Damon, as you mentioned there, you know, it's going to be a long road back for Uriah. You know, who does he fight from here? What does he do? You know, it must be soul-destroying for Uriah again.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's got to be a bummer. You know what I mean? And obviously, this is a big opportunity for him. And listen, I picked him to win the fight. I thought the way he was rolling, the way he fought to close out 2013, I thought this was his time. I was like, here we go. Yeah, this is the best Faber's ever looked. He's going to go in there and give Burrell a fight. Now, I was clearly wrong, very wrong.
Oh, I didn't pick as well, mate.
I think, you know, you put him in there against, you know, you put him in there against good guys. I mean, listen, he could go out there right now and fight a guy like Mike Easton. You know, Mike's off a couple losses, but he's always a tough guy. You know, he's always going to be a good challenge. You know, I think depending on how things roll down the way, I mean, he may be fighting for a title soon, but, you know, Rafael Assuncao is a guy that Faber has a win over at 145. So, I mean, I think that's a fight you could put together. Again, this is, you know, a little more distant down the road. But there's other guys that are going to be down there, guys dropping down from featherweight. You know, maybe eventually we see him, you know, he talked about doing super fights. I mean, you know, going up to 145 for the right fight. I mean, who wouldn't pay to see Uriah Faber fight BJ Penn at 145? I mean, come on, who wouldn't pay to see that fight? So there's still going to be opportunities out there for Uriah, and, you know, a high profile fight. I mean, listen, you know, they talked for years about Uriah fighting Miguel Torres because Miguel was the number one guy at bantamweight when Uriah was number one at 145. Now, that fight's completely not going to happen, as we know. But again, depending on the timing of things, I mean, who wouldn't want to see, you know, Faber against Frankie Edgar or Frank, you know, or Faber against BJ or, you know, any of those super fight type matchups? So there's still fights out there to keep him interested and keep him in the spotlight.
Definitely. Damon, will it ever happen for the guys at Team Alpha Male? Will they ever get a UFC champion?
You know, it's disappointing. Listen, here, let me kind of give you a two-sided answer to that question. One, I think it will eventually happen. There's just too much talent in that gym for it not to happen. You know, Chad Mendes, TJ Dillashaw, Joseph Benavidez, Uriah Faber. You know, they got this new kid coming in, Andre Feely, who is super good. Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent in that gym. It's going to happen eventually. But the flip side, and one thing I do want to point out, and this is going to sound a little disparaging, you know, everyone, you know, talks about the improvements they've made under Dwayne Ludwig, and I agree. Dwayne has been a fantastic coach, but what's going to define them is going to be a title, because you can't, you know, to always be the number one guy but never be the champion, that's going to haunt them. And so, fairly or unfairly, I think that's something that is going to loom overhead of that gym until someone finally brings home the gold from the UFC. I think Mendes is their best chance right now, because not only is he at the top of the division, but I think he's better than he's ever been. But I mean, you know, it's not, it's like I said, it's fair and it's unfair. It is fair because they are constantly in title fights. They are always there. So someone needs to bring home a belt to have that. But at the same time, you know, look at every camp across the world. You know, there's lots of, I mean, you know, American Kickboxing Academy, you know, they've had champions, but there, I guarantee you there's other camps out there that are, I mean, American Top Team is one of the best camps in the world. One of the best. They've never had a UFC champion. Wow. I mean, that never happened. So that's what I'm talking about. Just because, you know, you're a great camp doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a title. And that's I was blown away. Somebody told me that stat recently. They're like, American Top Team has never had a UFC champion. I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. But it's true.
Jeez, that's a big stat. I didn't know that one either myself. Full of stats here tonight, live on Talking Brawls, live. Damon, just before we wrap it up, obviously, you know, personally, I thought it was a very average UFC card, like many other people. You know, are these cards getting, you know, as I mentioned there earlier on, you know, is there not enough talent on the cards? They're too stretched, so to say.
I don't necessarily think that. I mean, listen, I think this card, you know, when you look at UFC, the UFC show that just happened in Chicago that I was at, you know, that card, that undercard didn't look great, but there were some great fights on there. I mean, Eddie Wineland was on the card against Evja Blaine, and then we had the great fight between Alex Caceres and Sergio Pettis. Again, not the biggest names in the world, but they just brought the fire. They went out there and brought in great fights. So, again, John McDessie, you know, can be a pretty exciting guy. Alan Patrick, in his first fight in the UFC, was a pretty exciting guy. No one can predict that they're going to go out there and lay an egg. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily the talents being spread too thin. I think it really comes down to the fighters. Either they show up and put on a show or they don't.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Damon. And, Damon, just before we wrap it up, a couple of things. That I read your article there today about Jessica Ai. Her fight was changed to a no contest with Sarah Kaufman. What do we know? Can you explain a bit to the guys about what happened there today?
Well, basically, over the weekend on Saturday, the Texas Commission sent out an email to one website saying the fight between Jessica Ai and Sarah Kaufman from UFC 166 was overturned to a no decision. Now, it's the weekend, so nobody was able to get a hold of the commission to find out why. As of today, I spoke to the commission, and basically, they said that Jessica Ai tested positive for a prohibited substance, a banned substance of some kind, and she was put on a probationary suspension for 1 year. Now, the probationary suspension from Texas basically means she needs to pay her fine, which I believe is $1,875, and she cannot, you know, have another infraction basically within that year period. I've not talked to Jessica. I talked to her manager today. Jessica hit me up on Twitter and promised that she would give me a call soon so we could kind of talk about everything. From what I've heard, is, and again, this is just rumor, this is not fact, and this is not coming from Jessica or her camp, but what I've heard is it was possibly a prescription medicine that she was taking, that she was allowed to have, but she didn't disclose. It's kind of the, you know, it's the, you know, it's the old, you know, the marijuana excuse. You know, you're prescribed the drug, but you're not allowed to have it in your system. I think that's what basically, that's why she was not technically suspended, is because it wasn't an illegal drug if she had disclosed it, if they knew about it ahead of time. Because there are drugs that are listed on the banned substances list through WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, but it depends on what it is and how you're using it, you know, whether or not they allow you to basically get an exemption, kind of like we always talk with TRT. You know, you're allowed to use TRT as long as you have an exemption for it. Well, I think from what I'm hearing, that's the case, but hopefully I'll talk to Jessica in the next day or so, and we'll kind of get this cleared up exactly what happened.
Brilliant stuff. Damon Martin, as always, absolute pleasure to have you on. What's going on with you for the next few days, Damon?
You know, it's kind of an enjoyable couple days. No fights this weekend, so I'm going to kind of enjoy a few days of downtime. And then, obviously, next week we gear up for UFC down in Brazil, Machida and Musasi, which should be a great fight. So, looking forward to that. It's always nice to have that one weekend kind of tossed in there where you get definitely. A weekend off. So, I'm kind of looking forward. Although, here in the States where I'm at, it's, you know, cold and snowy, so I don't know how much I'm going to enjoy it. But, you know, one weekend off from no fights, so I'll enjoy a little downtime this week.
Well, Damon, you'll be over here to the sun in September, fingers crossed.
I sure hope so. That's all I want right there.
And Damon, obviously tell the guys a little bit about your Nurikor movement. I know you're a big movie buff. Obviously the sad news we heard last night about Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, NurikorMovement.com is my website. We cover movies, TV, things like this. And yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away. I was such a huge fan of his. Let me, on a closing note before I get out of here, Almost Famous. I'm hoping everyone has seen that movie. I always get questions, and I'm sure you have as well. I always get questions from young writers, young guys doing this sport, you know, hitting me up and saying, how do I get involved? How do I get, you know, how do I get involved in MMA? How do I become an MMA journalist? And I always try to offer some advice of, you know, kind of how I did it. You know, it's obviously it's an arduous process. It's not easy, blah, blah, blah. But tell you what, if you want to know about journalism, go watch Philip Seymour Hoffman in the movie Almost Famous when he's talking about a journalist talking to rock stars. And rock stars to me are fighters. They're athletes. That's anybody. And he says, if you really want to be a friend to them, if you really want to be a friend to these guys that you're covering, be honest and unmerciful. And that's the best advice I could ever give anybody. And Philip Seymour Hoffman delivered that in just amazing form in Almost Famous. So, yeah, very sad to see him go. But that's a speech. That's words I will always live with as a writer. And I hope everybody that is a writer or a journalist or wants to get involved in the sport will take those words to heart. Be honest and unmerciful.
And there he is, Damon Martin, one of the best in the business. Damon, always great to have you on, and really do appreciate the time, my good friend.
Anytime you need me. Thank you so much for having me.
Talk to you soon, brother. Thanks very much.
Right. Bye-bye.
And that was Damon Martin. And guys, that is a wrap on the show tonight. Hit us up. Obviously, I hope you enjoyed the show first things off, but you can obviously hit us up on www.talkingbrawlsmixedmartialarts.com. Also on Twitter at Talking Brawls. And on Facebook, you'll find all of it on the new website. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I'll be back. It was supposed to be on Sunday night. Apologies for that. I had a few technical hitches this weekend. XLR cables breaking and editing systems crashing. Also, hit up the website. Yes, some good stuff from Keith and Joe on the website there as well. Shout out to those guys. But big thanks again to Damon Martin for breaking down UFC 169. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. From Niall McGrath, it's good luck and good night. All right, guys, cheers. Back with a podcast as well on Wednesday. All right, guys, thanks.
Broadcasting live from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts radio.